This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. This week's episode was recorded on February 21st, 2016. On this week's episode, Nick White and Paul Jaisley join me, Mike Rappin, to chat about DC's Rebirth and what it means for new and old readers. We take a few guesses at what Rebirth actually is and why it's happening, but let me be honest, it's all guessing. Before we start the show, I want to give a special thanks to Zach for writing in to us about last week's episode. I now have to reevaluate everything I said last week. Also, Alice Cott is not overrated. Thanks again, Zach. And now, this week's episode. This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I am your host, Mike Rappin, editor-in-chief for Destroy the Cyborg. With me this week are two amazing people, Nick White.
Hey.
And Paul Jaisley.
Hello.
How are you guys doing this week? How have comic books been?
Comics, I'm assuming, are fine. Unfortunately, I've been incredibly busy the past couple weeks. I haven't had a ton of time to read stuff, but the stuff I did read, I ended up enjoying quite a bit. Just to name a few, Gotham Academy number 15. I think I talked about issue 14 on a previous episode. This is a sort of yearbook story where they have different indie creators doing little, you know, 4 or 5 page stories in each issue. A lot of fun. Paper Girls number 5, which was even weirder than the previous 4 issues, and I can't even put into words what's happening in that book, and I love it. Judge Dredd number 2, this is the ongoing IDW series. I really want to enjoy it. I love the artwork in this book so much, but it's just not the sort of Judge Dredd that I'm normally used to from reading 2000 AD, but I'm willing to give it a few more issues to see how it pans out.
Oh, man, I missed picking that issue up. I need to go back and get that.
Overall, I thought it was better than issue 1, but still, I think it'll eventually click. So, but obviously, the best book I read this week and the book I was most excited about was Batman number 49. I will avoid any and all spoilers when discussing it, and I'll simply say Batman by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, and then Yannick Paquette for this particular issue, has been one of the weirdest comics I've read in a long time. It reminds me of Grant Morrison's run on Batman, but done in a much more streamlined, straightforward, focused way. This issue was just so mind-bending and awesome, ended with a perfect panel to end this type of story. I cannot wait for issue 50. Batman has absolutely been a perfect book for me lately. So that's your spoiler-free review of Batman 49.
Now, see, now when you say weird, you mean weird in a good way, right?
I mean weird in the best way. It's a book where, you know, if you don't read it or if you don't haven't read this type of Batman stuff, you expect Batman just to be a brooding character that just beats up drug dealers. When you have, you know, alternate future Batman showing up, when you have weird sort of contraptions Bruce Wayne made to prevent him from ever sort of dying, and that's to put it in a way that hopefully doesn't spoil anything. You're reaching a level where you can see Scott Snyder doing the thing Grant Morrison did, where he's trying to break the character down and find out what is the central idea of Batman. And in order to do that, he has to play with different takes on the character. It's like looking at the character through different lenses. And to have that happen as a part of the story, where the story is Batman taking on different personalities in a sense, it's weird. It's a weird book to read. It's not your typical just Batman beating up bad guys type story, and I love it because of that.
Cool. Nick, what'd you read this week? How have comic books been for you?
Comics have been good. This week's been a little bit lighter. Part of that's just because I've been pretty busy lately. Had a, you know, knock on wood, hopefully not anymore, a little incident at the beginning of the week with the dog breaking a nail that led to a whole bunch of bandaging issues and going to the vet, you know, the sort of thing you never really want to do when you're actually dog sitting, but it happened, and knock on wood, the dog's fine now, but it was, you know, well, you know, there's nothing quite as interesting as coming home from a beer run and discovering bloody footprints from the front door all the way to the kitchen. So that was a bit of an alarming experience, but that was weird, and I wouldn't recommend it for everybody, but I felt like I was stepping into a Wes Craven movie or something, but that happened, and things are a little more under control now, I think. But I got a little bit of reading done. So I read Wild's End, The Enemy Within, number 5. It's the 5th issue. There's one more to go in what is the second arc of this series from Dan Abnett in I.N.J. Colbard. I don't know what his full name. Could be a her, I guess, or his or her full name is, but it must be a real mouthful. I really, really like how this second arc has gone from the first arc being War of the Worlds to this arc being the sort of, like, who can we trust? The people all get interned by the government in this camp, and it's like, well, you know, the aliens could look like you, and the aliens could look like you. And it's been really, really interesting. And issue 5 reminded me that despite the fact that this is a book about cutesy animals dressing up like people and driving cars and all of the other people sort of anthropomorphized actions, this book isn't afraid to actually do some pretty dark stuff. And 5 was a bit of a brutal reminder of that. I won't say any more. This book is amazing. I read Black Magic number 4. I didn't like it that much, but I'm gonna
whatever,
keep...
you're wrong, but that's all right.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I feel like this book is really slow building, but you gotta give me those little bite-sized payoffs. I don't need a huge reveal. I don't need to find out so-and-so kills so-and-so, or, you know, so-and-so is really so-and-so, but just little things to work with would be nice. But it's you know, Greg Rucka, so I can wait a long time anyway on that.
Mm-hmm.
Read some weird Shadow Man issues, trying to understand the current Ninjak Shadow Man thing. Didn't help. But what do you expect? But the big issue that I read this week, of course, was Batman 49 as well. Actually just finished it. Despite that, I don't think it's still 100% as clear in my mind either. Really talkative issue. That's not a negative thing, but just really what it was. And an issue that really continued to deal with this whole the concepts of having a legacy, having a dynasty. How do you deal with that? How do you preserve that? A lot of people always disregard Batman, and they're like, well, he's just a man, and he could be killed, and he doesn't really have any powers. But on the flip side of that, it allows for some very interesting ideas about preserving one's legacy, and even trying to preserve oneself physically and literally. And this issue really explored that, and as Paul said, explores sort of different facets of one's personality, or just sort of even goes so far as to explore the potential future of having a lineage or a legacy of people taking up the cape and cowl. And it made for a really emotional, meditative issue with some great guest art by Yannick Paquette, as Paul already mentioned. Really eager to see what happens with 50, but I'm even more excited to see if any of the sort of, you know, plot threads that were continued from Detective Comics 27 find their way into other places as well, in addition to this issue. So, that's what I read. What about you, Mike?
Well, for me this week, I did actually sit down and I read all of the floppy books that I've had sitting and waiting for me for like the past 3 or 4 weeks. So I flew through a bunch of stuff.
Oh, wow.
I read Saga. I read Sex Criminals number 14, which was by far one of the strangest issues of that comic yet. And that I think is saying something to the point where I don't even want to explain it, but things get incredibly meta, like in the most literal sense. It is really great. At first, I thought it was shticky, and then it rounds itself off really, really well. The issue on the whole is pretty good, and having bagged and bored the issue last night, I saw what the actual title was, and knowing the contents of the book, it makes complete sense in my head now. So that was really good. I also managed to sit down and read Snowfall number 1, which came out this week, and it very, very much felt like the first issue of Great Pacific all over again, and I was looking forward to it last week, and it definitely paid off. I'm going to at least see the the book through the first arc. I don't know how much it's going to be for me, but I have a feeling I'm going to get hooked just like I did in Great Pacific. So that should be really good. Joe Harris is fantastic as a writer, as far as I'm concerned. But the big thing that I read this week that I was really excited for and was probably the best book that I read was Superman American Alien number 4, which is Max Landis's book with art by... Oh, the name escaped me. I'm so sorry.
This one is Jay Lee.
It's Jay Lee on this one.
Yes, yeah. Jay Lee. Yes, thank you. Yeah, American Alien number 4 with art by Jay Lee, written by Max Landis. This book continues to be a perfect little dive into Superman's continuity and his interactions with all the major players in the DC universe. We haven't met Wonder Woman yet, but in this issue we meet Dick Grayson, and I don't want to say anything more than that, but we meet Dick Grayson for a small moment in the book, and I absolutely loved it. I sent a picture of the page that I really, really enjoyed to Nick last night, and Nick decided to tell me that, oh, well, you know, Dick Grayson isn't actually as good of a detective as Bruce. And I'm like,
no, that's not what I meant. What I meant was equally snobby, but, okay. And I think Paul is going to tell you anyway. I don't even need to say it.
Well, nonetheless, the issue was great. It's a more dive into, you know, Superman becoming, or Clark Kent actually becoming Superman. And we meet Lex Luthor for the first time. We meet, Oliver Queen after he gets lost on the island, and we're really starting to see a lot of the bigger DC elements tie in. So we're getting little bits and pieces of other people's origin stories while we're also getting Clark Kent realizing his full potential as a person on the planet. And it's so good. I really cannot explain how fantastic this book is. Like, issue 1, 2, and 3 were great, but 4, by far the best so far, and I have a feeling that this book is only going to get better and better each month. So this is like the coolest 7-issue miniseries you can buy right now. I can't suggest it enough. I know that, I don't know, Paul and Nick, if you have read it at all, but I think you guys would really enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I am avoiding it, and because of Max Landis, I've never been a fan of him.
I was going to say, Mike, you must have some real cognitive dissonance going on there between you loving this book and potentially realizing how much
Hey, I like Max Landis.
Okay.
Yeah, guys leave me alone.
It's fine. I mean, it's never been my thing, so that's why I avoided the book. Yeah. But everything I hear about it from people that are both big Superman fans and someone like you, Mike, who's not a big Superman fan, they both are praising it pretty equally. So I'm going to have to read it. I'll wait till it's collected probably and read it all in one go.
Oh, yeah.
I'm kind of excited actually to read it in that sense, knowing that someone like you who's not a Superman fan is enjoying it. It makes me want to do a trade. Like, you know, I'll read this and I'll tell you what Superman book you should read. And then we can have like a back and forth like that maybe.
Yeah, I would absolutely love doing that.
Out of curiosity, what is the number one Superman book you should read, Paul?
Put him on the spot.
I'm going to say if you were enjoying,
he's thought this through in the I past. I'm sure he makes a list every day when he wakes up. He like you know scratches out the last one and he's like, no way.
No, I was wrong. No, if you enjoy this book, from what I've heard on it, I would recommend Superman Secret Identity by Kurt Busiek. Fantastic 4-issue miniseries.
Okay.
That is about someone becoming Superman in the same sort of sense. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Very cool. Well, let's move on and instead talk about what we're excited for this week. So, Nick, do you want to start? What are you excited for this week?
For me, my pick of the week is the very wordy book or wordy title by Dark Horse of Hellboy and the BPRD 1953 Beyond the Fences number 1.
Hmm.
Oh man, I think there's at least one colon in there might be two. So, for those of you who aren't aware, Hellboy has sort of gone from being the, in fact, maybe the Hellboy ongoing is still a thing, but recently they've done this whole Hellboy and the BPRD, because why not combine two of the things that are making a lot of money for you? And last year we obviously got Hellboy and the BPRD 1952. That was the first Hellboy series I really picked up in singles, and like most Hellboy, it was a wonderful self-contained story. I think that was co-written by, John Arcudi. John Arcudi co-wrote it with
That sounds right.
Mignola, if that's how you say that as well. And that had art from Alex Maleev. So fantastic, fantastic team on that. This time around, they've done the exact same sort of thing. You've got a different guest writer, or who I, you know, we're all jaded, aren't we? The person that I strongly suspect is taking the three or four sentences from Mike Mignola and actually doing the actual writing, which is fine. We're all jaded. What can I say? I mean, we see things like this in the credits and we're like, yeah, you can't fool me. Like, I know what's going on. But this time around, you've got Chris, I think it's Robertson. Robertson. It's not Robertson, I think. That or I wrote it down wrong. He's the guy who wrote iZombie. With Mike Allred. And he also recently did the Aliens part of the Aliens Fire and Stone miniseries for Dark Horse, which was also really, really good. So it's exciting to see, you know, some new talent working on that. And then, of course, the main draw for me is that you've got Paolo Rivera on art, who, you know, this week it really came down to Bloodshot Reborn and this. And so how dare you make me pick between Jeff Lemire and Paolo Rivera? It was a lot easier when the Valiant rolled around and both were on the same book. And I was like, well, the life is easy now. I don't have to pick. But Rivera's artwork is going to be absolutely 100% stellar, as always. The covers for this series look like Norman Rockwell paintings. I dig it. That's great. And it's the whole idea that there's trouble in suburbia. There's some monster that's been snatching up kids, and so we're going to plunk Hellboy right into the middle of, like, 1950s Americana, suburbia, white picket fences. Let's see what happens. I think it sounds great. So that's my pick.
Gotcha. Paul, what about you?
My pick, and I have to admit right off the bat that next week is absolutely stacked for me. There's a ton of books coming out, so it's tough to pick one.
I'm the same way.
I want to pick something that I haven't really talked about on the show before, and that's Cry Havoc number 2. I picked up the first issue of Cry Havoc more or less on a whim. They had a bunch of extra issues on the stand at my shop. I flipped through it, and I've always really enjoyed Ryan Kelly's artwork. So that attracted me. I never read anything by Cy Spurrier, but I love Ryan Kelly's artwork. And then I liked the idea that they used three different colorists for the issue. I love that sort of hook where each portion of the story, if it takes place at a different timeline or a different location, is colored by a different colorist. And I was just kind of intrigued by it, and I enjoyed the first issue immensely. I really have no way of describing what the book's about or what's going on, but I enjoyed.
That's understandable. Having read the book, I couldn't tell you either.
But I
having
enjoyed
read the preview
reading
in the back
it,
of one of the other issues. I can't tell you either.
There's something about wolves. There's something or hyenas, I guess, and there's something about the Iraq War and mercenaries, in a sense, and supernatural abilities. It's all in there, but what I enjoyed so much about the book was actually the reading experience, if that makes sense. Like, it was a beautiful looking book. The story unfolded in this nice sort of interesting pace where I was intrigued even though I didn't know what was going on, and then the hook of the three different colorists actually made the book a super enjoyable, engaging read. So I'm just excited to continue that with issue 2 and hopefully learn more about the story along the way.
I just to add one more comment about the colorist, it was incredibly apparent that they were using different colors, but not in a bad way, because the scenes were changing. Like, they would go into the past, they would go to another place, and it was like the color definitely matched the scene really, really well. It was unbelievable how well done that was.
I was gonna say, it didn't feel gimmicky at all. It wasn't just like, we're having this completely radical different color change. The changes between colorists were subtle enough where it was never jarring, but you knew immediately where the story and when the story, that portion of the story was taking place. You know what I mean? It could be an easy gimmick, but it didn't feel like a gimmick.
That's really, really interesting. I don't know if I've ever seen that done before. Obviously, we've had multiple pencilers share an issue where they're, you know, evoking different eras or different, you know, POVs or whatnot. I don't know if I've ever seen the same penciler, but they swap out the colorists, except for, you know, when your issue is rushing to get, you know, get printed and they're like, quick, get someone else on this to finish it. Yeah. You know, when you see two colorists at that point, something really bad is going down. But I can't quite say I've ever seen it done in a careful, calculating, you know, with an eye towards the art sort of way. That's fascinating. I don't know.
Yeah. I think this book is pretty much trying to prove that something like that is possible and how important colorists are. Like, we did the whole episode about colorists, and it's like this book is, I wish this book had come out then, so we could have had a million examples to explain like how important coloring is to a book. But yeah, nonetheless, this book is fantastic. I'm really enjoying it, and like you said, the reading experience is very unique compared to a lot of others.
Yeah, exactly. That was the real hook for me, was just how engaged I was in reading it. You know, a lot of times when you're reading books, if you read a lot of comic books, you can breeze right through them. This one, I actually stopped and paid attention to each page. It was a satisfying full experience.
Totally. Well, my pick for this week is a book that I've been waiting for quite a while now, actually. It's Karnak number 2, which is a book by Warren Ellis and Gerardo Zaffino. It's a Marvel book that's all about Karnak, who is the, I don't even know what to describe him as. He's like this nihilist, crazy, inhuman dude who essentially is recruited by
so
S.H.I.E.L.D.
Warren Ellis?
To solve problems. Yeah, it's honestly, honest to God, this the way that the character is written, it's like Warren Ellis is just sitting thinking, how would I approach this? And then it becomes the comic. And it's been really good, and the delays have had no reason. The book's been done. The art's been done. Like, Warren Ellis has been posting on social media saying, like, this book is done. I don't know what the delay is.
Weird.
So there's just some weirdness going on there. The cover by David Aja is probably one of the most beautiful covers for this series that I've seen so far. And, I'm just excited to see more of Warren Ellis being ornery at the world, because that's what this book is. And to me, there is no better pleasure than seeing Warren Ellis just call everyone stupid for 22 to 24 pages a month. So I'm totally okay with that.
I think you've basically just put into words why I don't like Warren Ellis books. So thank you.
Well, I'm glad that I could help.
Yeah.
Oh man. What is Karnak like? Not to be all like superhero-ish and whatnot, but like what is Karnak's ability anyway? What can he do other than apparently be snarky, I guess? Or
he's the shatterer. Or, he's the shatterer. He hits things and they shatter. That's literally his superpower.
Really, that's it?
Yeah.
The idea is
he has like the power.
Literally,
sorry,
the idea,
go ahead, Paul.
The idea is that he could see the flaws in an object. So that if he looked at like a wall, he could see where the cracks in the wall are, even though they might not be visible, and he knows exactly where to hit it to make it shatter. So, yeah, the shatterer. Yeah.
They were running pretty low at the bottom of the superpower grab bag at that point, huh?
Well, he's a character that's been around for quite a while, and it's just interesting that they're focusing on it. And so they've taken the idea of Karnak, and they've taken the idea of his power and started to apply it to people as well, so he can see people and he can figure out how to quote unquote break them. And so the idea of this story is that they're trying to track down some terrorists, and so he's trying to figure out how to break these terrorists. And I don't know, we'll see. Like, number one was kind of a one-off issue, and it's just like, haha, S.H.I.E.L.D. and Coulson was in it and blah blah blah. And
Coulson makes everything
at the end of the
better.
Day,
what's your problem?
At the end of the day, though, this is Warren Ellis just like making fun of the Marvel Universe and the Inhumans, and I don't know. Somehow they're letting him get away with all of this, and I'm okay with that. So this book is fun.
That's really weird that he has Porcelain's power from Secret Six. Porcelain's got
the same
power. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Making things she can make things brittle, and then break them,
Huh. Well, it's not the same, because he can break things without making them brittle, so...
yeah,
Porcelain's stupid.
Sometimes there are news items or events in the comic book industry that are so interesting or mind-bending that we have to discuss them here on the show. And if you're listening to the show, I have to assume that you are an avid comic book fan, and as such, follow along with comic book news on Twitter or social media. So at this point, you're probably well aware of DC Comics' upcoming rebirth, quote-unquote, relaunch that will be unveiled formally at the end of March, I believe. So they've announced the titles that will be published. They've announced that they're going to do a sort of revamp, or in their terms, a rebirth of their universe. And we wanted to sit down and talk about what that really means. Now, we don't really have many details. All we have is a list of titles. We don't have creative teams or any type of solicitation, so we're going to avoid speculating because that doesn't do us any good. What we want to talk about instead is what a rebirth means, that term, and whether or not this is the right approach for a comic book publisher that needs to attract new and varied audiences. So, I guess I, as a longtime DC comic book fan, I think I did the math and I've been reading or interested or knowledgeable about DC comics for over 25 years of my life. I'm of two minds on this. I love DC continuity. I love classic DC continuity. But at the same time, I don't think returning to the continuity the way a rebirth implies is the right approach. And I think it's worth noting that they're calling this a rebirth, which is a loaded term for DC. That's the name of the miniseries that Geoff Johns wrote, who's spearheading all this, to reintroduce Hal Jordan in Green Lantern Rebirth and reintroduce Barry Allen in Flash Rebirth. So I have to assume that in some sense, this is going to be a return to classic continuity. What do you guys think? What does rebirth mean to you?
I could jump in and straight up say, you know, as longtime listeners probably already know, I'm totally more in the Marvel camp with a lot of this, but I've been following DC, you know, for the past 5 or so years, especially when the New 52 came out, and I was reading a little bit of DC before they did the New 52. But Rebirth to me, and seeing the list of titles with all the new number ones, it feels like they're trying to get back to basics, to like what they know will sell. Mm-hmm. They're taking no risks, and they're just saying, okay, we know that all these movies are coming out. We know that these are characters that have sold well consistently for the past 60 years, so they're just pushing all of them. Like, without, I mean, honestly, you can look at this huge list, and if you haven't seen this list, look at for Newsarama or Comic Book Resources. They have this list of all the rebirth titles. Every single one of the books that are getting new number ones, especially the ones that are getting quote unquote rebirth issues, mm-hmm. for instance, the Hellblazer rebirth number one, these all seem to be books that are selling well before the end of the New 52, I guess is what we're going to be calling it. And books that have sold consistently since the New 52 and prior to the New 52, such as Batman, Birds of Prey, Batgirl, Supergirl, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, you know, like the flagship books at this point. Mm-hmm. So to me, it just seems like they're trying to bring their numbers back up by, you know, double shipping books. So we're getting books that are shipping twice monthly, as well as just pushing all of their known winners to the forefront. But maybe I'm completely wrong, but I don't know. What are you guys thinking as well? I guess, Nick, what are you thinking?
For me, I totally agree with Paul in terms of, like, you can't ignore the fact that Geoff Johns is spearheading everything. He's in charge right now. So to call it rebirth is such a massively intentional decision. And yes, you automatically think of Green Lantern Rebirth. And yeah, for me, that's like really scary because, you know, Rebirth was, hey, good news. Remember Hal Jordan? He was that straight white male dude that turned into Parallax because he's kind of a fucking moron and like killed everyone. aren't you glad he's back at the helm again when really he should be probably in therapy? And even more disturbingly, isn't it great that we're going to take the Green Lantern mantle from John Stewart, you know, the African-American Green Lantern at the time? And of course, I'm not saying that Geoff Johns' big, you know, master plan here is to, you know, racially homogenize the DC universe.
I can't believe that that's, yeah.
I'm sure Geoff Johns is sitting at his desk somewhere going, oh, fuck, they figured it out. I don't think that's the plan, but I do think Paul's completely right in the sense that it is sort of like we need to go back and hold tight to the basics and what people love, because clearly this is very much a response to the DCU. And there's no denying that DC is kind of has their backs up against the wall right now. Marvel sort of had them over a barrel even before Star Wars came around the corner. And now Star Wars is really putting the hurt on DC in terms of sales. Mm-hmm. So that didn't help. Then DC tried the DCU as sort of a response. And unfortunately, DC readership and the attempt to get new readers possibly didn't work, or it didn't work as well or as fast as DC wanted. I have a feeling that, some of those books took off, like Batgirl of Burnside and Midnighter definitely struck a chord with people, and Omega Men, my goodness. I mean, we all know the whole saga and story of, is it 12 issues? Is it ongoing? Are they really going to kill it? Are they really going to bring it back? What's going on? So DC's in a bad place, and they've decided that this is the best move for them, apparently. Of course, with their movies right around the corner again, and their shows are really popular, they feel like they're totally justified in reaching back and grabbing these things. And it's, I'm not crazy about this list of books. I'll level with you guys. I'm not. Like, well, I mean, where's the weird? Like, for me, you know, instead of where's the beef, it's like, where's the weird? And there's none.
Right.
I would watch a series of well-constructed commercials featuring you, Nick. You know, just where's the weird, looking at all the different publishers.
Looking at all of the DC books, just flipping through them. You know, where's the weird, you know? DC, take that on.
That's a really good point,
Nick. And Dave Thomas shows up. Okay, sorry.
That's a really good point. Because if it is a move that's designed to increase sales, you know, they have to go back to what worked to them in the past, because the DCU didn't do what they wanted it to. That sort of brand, or, you know, approach to books seemed like a response to what readership wanted, but none of the books sold well, besides maybe Batgirl. So it's like, here, we'll give you guys what you want. Oh, you actually don't want to buy them? Well, why are we going to make them, you know?
So here's what you want. We're going to fight this battle with one arm behind our back by not really plugging those books, for the most part, within our own books or virtually anywhere else. And then we're just going to, like, hope that you hardcore DC readers are going to gravitate to the weirder stuff.
They are keeping Gotham Academy, and it sounds like it's going to be the same creative team as well. So, yes. I mean, they're keeping that, and I think that was, as far as, I read that book, and I don't really pay attention to numbers or sales figures, so I kind of assumed it wasn't really that popular. I mean, I could be wrong, maybe it was more successful than I thought, but I'm kind of interested that they're keeping that one, but not, like you mentioned, a book that was more critically successful, like Omega Men, or, you know, that was kind of their...
At least there was a lot of news around that book. I don't think there was as much news around Gotham Academy.
Yeah.
The Omega Men thing is a little bit muddied by the fact of whether or not it was going to end at 12, or like that maybe the writers and team actually wanted it to. So that one's a little bit more complicated. But if you look at some of the other books that they decided to cancel, I'm pretty shocked. Like We Are Robin apparently was not doing well enough, or they're not interested in continuing that. Catwoman, the book that I think a lot of us was actually shocked made it this far, to be honest. Right. Yeah. That's one of the only books on this list they're ending that even, you know, made it this far from the onset of the New 52 itself. So great, there's another female solo book, you know, shuttered, and then they got rid of Midnighter, which of course was, I can only assume, one of the only right now, and probably one of DC's only, if they're only, you know, solo gay male lead character book out there. Which, geez, DC, like, what are you thinking? You had the most insane amount of stupid PR bullshit when you were trying to go into spin control with all of the Batwoman can't get married stuff. I mean, remember that Dan Didio? Like, that was bad. And then everyone started putting up those signs with the numbers of how many days it had been since DC Comics made a huge gaffe.
Right. Yeah.
Like, how can you cancel Midnighter? And I hear it's a good book. I was trade waiting this. Here's the perils of trade waiting, I guess. And then they go and cancel this. How can you do that and not say this looks bad? But there's another case of DC just it's you know, they're minimizing the risks. If you don't have a lantern ring, if you don't have an S on your chest, if you don't have a cape and cowl, you're not really a part of this anymore, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like we've been saying, it feels like a scaling back, an attempt to go back to what they know best, but I mean, I feel like that's kind of what you have to do. I mean, the DC universe is known for being a certain way. I mean, if you want to attract readership, you have to go back to what you do well, but mm-hmm. I mean, where do you draw the line between let's get back fans that were maybe lapsed or kind of losing interest versus let's attract a whole new readership? And I don't think they've been able to balance that well in the past.
Yeah, and I think that they're probably relying on a lot of sales. I mean, I while you guys were talking, I was looking up the most, like, the top 200 books that came out in December of 2015, and every single one of DC's top 100, I got to about 150. The top 150, the vast majority were Batman, Superman Justice books, League. Wonder Woman, yeah. Justice League, and Gotham Academy was actually up there, and Green Lantern. Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. And those were in the top 150, and then everything else that we're talking about falls below that, and they are just being destroyed by all of these different Marvel books and Image books.
Yeah.
So as far as numbers go, you know, and I, that's, you know, strictly based on, we don't actually know if those sold well in actual shops, but that's what shops were ordering, and that's the numbers that they have to rely on. So if they're falling back just on that, then I think that these Rebirth books look exactly like what you'd expect. Like, based strictly on sales data. Like, you can have as much public outcry on the internet for things, but that doesn't mean anything if the books are not actually selling. Like, the vocal minority does not represent the actual sales majority, mm-hmm. unfortunately. So, I mean, just to put a little salt into this whole conversation.
That's a good point. You're absolutely right. That's a really
good
point.
I still remember the anecdote of when Snakes on a Plane, like, people would not shut up about that on the internet. You remember this? It was all over websites, and they had all these campaigns, and they were like, man, this is going to be like the first, you know, we let you name the movie, mm-hmm. and this is this whole, like, we're going to, as an internet community, we're going to get out there and go to the movie theaters and spend our hard-earned money, and there don't seem to be any flaws in this line of logic at all. Mm-hmm. And then of course it didn't do well. Surprise. And DC knows this. You don't need research metrics to tell you that just because you have a lot of loud voices on the internet does not mean those people either A, have the money, or B, the drive or the desire to, you know, foment change, you know, vote with your dollar or whatnot. And that's unfortunate. I think it's absolutely unfortunate that that's the case. But you sort of have to wonder. I mean, DC is literally doubling down here. When you look at a lot of these issues that are going to go bi-monthly now, like, that is how much confidence they have in, what, 8 characters, 9 characters?
Yeah, well, and I especially mean, when you get down to the fall releases, you see books like Harley Quinn, Suicide Squad, and Harley Quinn was another big one that was up there. I lumped that under the Batman umbrella, but Harley Quinn, there were 3 Harley Quinn books, and they all were in the top 100 easily.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just think, like, they're definitely banking on the success of their movies and TV shows as well. And I know you already said that, Paul, but just to reiterate it.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting to me, because I've always been under the impression that movies and successful TV shows, whatever, don't really move the needle on monthly books that much. So, like when Watchmen comes out, the sales of the collection of Watchmen had a huge spike. But that doesn't mean there's going to be a ton of people buying DC books regularly. I mean, at the same time, the DC continuity, that deep continuity, is kind of their big selling point, because when Batman versus Superman comes out, stores will be able to point to Dark Knight Returns. They'll be able to point to a collected trade paperback and say, oh, yeah, you like that movie? Here's the story. That doesn't translate to monthly sales, so why base your marketing strategy around the movies that much? I don't quite get it.
Well, I'm wondering if DC's going to pull like a really interesting PR stunt sometime later this year before Suicide Squad comes out. Mm-hmm. And they're going to say, hey, if you like this movie, read this book. And they're going to pair those two together. You're going to see the cover of Suicide Squad number one next to the poster for Suicide Squad the movie, or Harley Quinn, or Deathstroke. You know, like, yeah. And then eventually Justice League coming down the line, you're going to say, hey, you can read this book and maybe it ties in and has a similar story to the actual movie. Mm-hmm. That's like the only way I could see them doing something that works out. Maybe the Suicide Squad comic book is the bridge between Suicide Squad 1 and Suicide Squad 2, you know, assuming mm-hmm. there's going to be a second movie right off the bat. So yeah. that, I mean, yeah. I think that would be yeah. a bit of a stretch, mm-hmm. but it would also be like, I feel like it's a last ditch effort to try to drive comic sales based on movie sales.
I just think that's a backwards policy, because in the past, it's never seemed to work. Like, there's no yeah. example of that actually translating to monthly sales. So, I don't know. But again, I think we're getting back to this overarching point of DC is going to be marketing toward people that are already familiar with their product, in a sense, and not toward new readers. And yeah. I mean, I might have to, you know, recuse myself from the conversation, because I don't know what a new reader is. I can't put myself in headspace. You know, I don't know what new readers right. want. I've been reading, like I said, I've been reading DC Comics for most of my life, and I like the deep continuity stuff. That's what I'm attracted to. I don't know, and I can't tell you what a new reader to DC would want.
Right, like what's someone who's never really read a Batman book or read any DC books in general,
yeah.
what they actually want out of a comic book, what they expect, maybe. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, nostalgia for watching the cartoon show when they were younger, or sure. having seen the movies. And they jump, if you jumped into a Batman book now based on having only seen the Christopher Nolan Batman movies, like
right.
how would you feel about things? I don't think that you would see that one-to-one correlation or, you know, anything like that.
Exactly.
But I mean, this is all solely on guess. As an experienced, I guess, experienced, quote unquote, long time comic book reader for at least 10 years now, I can't say I know what new readers want, because when I jumped into comics, I didn't know what I wanted. I just wanted to read comic books. You know, I had that nostalgia for X-Men. So I was like, okay, this is X-Men, I guess, you know. But I wonder if that mentality has changed. Maybe people assume they will be more catered to when they pick up a comic book.
I don't know. For me, when I look at this whole strategy, I actually see DC as seeing new readers, whatever you want to call that, as a just not even an issue. Like, they don't even see that as something to pursue. I think they are, like I said, quite literally doubling down, and they are banking on their old guard to not get blown off or offended by all this new weird stuff. They want to keep those people around, and they want to keep those people buying more. And I think for them, that really is their strategy here. I'll just read you this quote. This is what Geoff Johns said regarding who this event is for, so to speak, or event, reboot, whatever you want to call it. Let's just, you know, who Rebirth is for. He said, quote, if you have, like me, long boxes of DC Comics, you will be very, his emphasis, very happy. If you've never read a DC comic before, you won't be too lost. This is definitely for comic book readers more than it is for casual readers.
Wow. So he's making no bones about it. It's for fans.
Now, I shortened certain parts of abridged certain parts of the quote, but I obviously did not flip the words around, and Geoff Johns didn't go, and don't say it isn't for new readers, and then I, you know, chopped that. But yeah, I love that phrase of, you won't be too lost. Like,
yeah.
How half-hearted an attempt to say, new readers, you're welcome. Well, you'll be okay, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And, Jesus. You know, we'll post a link to this actual interview on CBR in the show notes if anyone's interested in actually reading a longer form discussion about it. But I think that does a pretty good job of summing up what we're trying to get at today, which is, like, this is going to be for old-time readers, and maybe they're just assuming if you're going to jump in, we're going to do our best to try to catch you up, but you got to just roll with it. As we've said in many, many other episodes, like, sometimes you just have to roll with comics and let it play out and just start from the point that you're at and assume that, you know, maybe things will get explained, maybe they won't, but you have to build your own understanding as you go along. And I don't know if that's fair, but I don't know. Like, it's that seems to be the only way to, for me, that seems to be the only way to approach these sorts of things.
And Mike, you're totally right. These things, sometimes you just have to sit it out and wait and see what happens. And here comes the dog in to see what I'm doing. That's okay. Whatever. And I think the problem here, or the danger with Rebirth, is from a financial standpoint, can you afford to just sit this one, you just sit it out and see what happens? Can you afford to just wait it out when all of a sudden Batman is twice a month and all of a sudden, I mean, it's from a financial standpoint, I don't know what to say. Sure, it is worth pointing out that DC has gone back to that claim they had with the New 52, which was, I forget, they had a little catchy rhyme for it as well, but the whole premise was, you know, our books are going to be $2.99 and nothing more. And of course, if you know anything about the New 52, eventually they, you know, you ended up with your $3.99 flagship books and your $4.99 one-shots and your special extended, you know, oh my goodness, dog, hold on, weird. This dog is desperately attempting to, you know, wrap all the cords around it. One second. Jesus.
I think the phrase was, we draw the line at $2.99.
That's what it was.
It was a slant rhyme.
Yeah exactly. And then following that, you know, Dan Didio flipped his baseball cap backwards and did the lean against the brick wall and, you know, crossed his hands. And,
yeah.
You know, and then the DJ, you know, hit, you know, pushed down on the record and it made the record noise. Anyway, that's what it does in my brain. So that's really what's frustrating for me is I look at this and I go, okay, well, let's wait and see if this Batman bi-monthly thing is going to work. And the rumor is that it's going to be Tom King. That is one of the very, 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 very few names you could put on this book. And I would go, I will remotely consider a bi-monthly Batman book. It's almost like they're inside my brain, which, who knows, Dan Didio's a devious individual. But that is
Nick's
really,
opinion. That is really, not the opinion of this podcast.
Exactly. That's true. All expressed views are my own. But that's kind of the danger for me. Like, how expensive is this going to be for me to wait and see if it's any good?
Right.
Yeah. That part's just frustrating.
I mean, I'm withholding any sort of commitment or interest until I see creative teams, because that's what's really going to draw me to books. I mean, obviously, Tom King has already kind of been mentioned as doing Batman. I think we know Scott Snyder is going to be on Detective at this point. So I'm interested in that stuff. I just, you know, again, as a lifelong, more or less, DC reader, I can understand the appeal. I can understand where Geoff Johns is coming from. And knowing Geoff Johns is a hardcore continuity nerd, I can understand where he's coming from and kind of be excited about that. Like, I want the return of those stories, those characters, that continuity I remember. And I'm trying to balance that with saying, this is what I want. Do I represent the correct demographic that they should be going after? Have they basically said, look, we know that the people that read our comics are guys in their 30s and 40s. They've been reading for a long time. And that's who we know is going to buy our books. And that's it. You know, we're not going to try to attract readers that might be more fickle or wouldn't be as loyal.
Yeah. Right. Again, we're not going to go after people that haven't read comic books before. We're not going to go after that rumored illusory group of people that come out of the movie theater and go, oh, geez, let's go to Barnes & Noble right now. I need to buy all of those books. You know, pipe dream people that, like, DC executives are like, why don't you just, it's basically Bigfoot, Sasquatch, UFOs, and then the people that, you know, watch the movie and actually want to go read the comics.
Yeah. I mean, maybe, and it's kind of weird to say or even think, but maybe the new readers don't exist, at least for DC comics. Maybe new readers are people that are only reading Image or, you know, smaller publishers. You know, and it's weird. And like I said, you know, I might be biased because once I read that they're going to return Action Comics and Detective Comics, their two sort of flagship titles, at least historically, to their original numbering, I kind of got excited because I'm like, oh, that means we're going to actually have Action Comics number 1,000 in a few years. You know what I mean? That idea, that means nothing, But as a fan of DC Comics, it's oddly exciting that that's still a thing. And I think it's, you know, yeah. But it is symbolic of this idea of saying, we're going to go back. Don't worry. You know, don't worry, longtime readers. Don't worry, guys. We're coming back to what you remember and what you want.
Right.
Again, again, part of me is appealed by, finds that appealing. But as someone that's thinking logically about the future of comics as an industry and DC as a company, I'm like, maybe that's not the best strategy.
Right. Exactly. Gotcha. You know, what does DC need to do to survive? And maybe that's the whole idea. Maybe DC, let's look on the brighter side of things here for the next 20 seconds. maybe DC really does want to offer up some weird stuff. Maybe they're like, Nick White, we're really sorry about iVampire and OMAC and Frankenstein and All-Star Western and Gotham by Midnight and Justice League International. We're really, really sorry about those unfortunate circumstances under which we had to close your bizarre books that you and five other people were reading. And you know what? We're under tough times right now, and we swear, once we're done, once things are better, we won't have 14 Superman books, and we'll give you exactly what you want. But I doubt it.
Right. Right.
Thank you for that build up to that.
Yeah, no problem.
Nick just had to air his grievances. Sorry about that, everyone.
Oh man, it's so bad. Like I know we've gone over this point a million times before, but DC cancels my books, and this is going to be no different. When Rebirth rolls around, Secret Six is going to be gone. Dr. Fate's going to be gone. Justice League 3001. If you thought that was kind of a weird alternate book, that's going to be gone. Martian Manhunter, Sinestro, Robin, Son of Batman, and for me, one of the more common themes there is, honestly, it's just books that don't play well with continuity, books that it's hard to shape and mold into this ongoing universe that Geoff Johns is apparently very, very obsessed with having now, and we've talked about continuity and canon and whatnot before. But it honestly feels like so much of the time people just want a good book. I know that's a whole other topic in its own right, but people are less obsessed with canon and continuity these days. At least I thought.
I thought so too. But yeah, Nick, I do have to point out that if you want weird comic books, DC does have you covered because they just announced a new Scooby-Doo book, right? The Wacky Races, post-apocalyptic Wacky Races book. And I'm excited for the Johnny Quest.
Oh, you know, my goodness. So book, excited. But. What is that? Future Squad or whatever? Future Quest, I think.
Future Quest.
Space Ghost meets Johnny Quest.
And the Herculoids. The Herculoids.
Yeah.
Yes.
See, but doesn't this all seem to call back to this idea of trying to attract new or attract old readers back to DC to say, hey, look, remember this? Yep. Hey, look, remember this? And it sounds to me like it's working. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
between the two of you, the only two people I talk to this stuff about, it seems to be working.
I'm of two minds. It's the irrational part of me that's like, yes, I love DC Comics and I love the history of it, also balanced with the more critical side of me saying like, I can't believe they canceled Midnighter, I can't believe they're double shipping books because that's actually costing me more money. You know, I'm nitpicking all these tiny things while at the same time being sort of generally excited about it.
Right.
Yeah. And they're hoping that your impulsiveness will definitely pull its weight. So we'll see. We'll find out more in March, I think. We might have to do a part two or something like that to actually discuss this, or we'll just touch on it a little bit at some point.
It will be very interesting when the teams roll out what exactly is going on, especially because with this whole double shipping thing, I'm super interested to see how the art duties and the writing duties as well are split or handled on a lot of these books. I think that is going to be one of the major deciding factors because all three of us, I think, are fairly discerning individuals when it comes to comics, and I think we're pretty good at sniffing out bullshit. And so I think when a lot of us look at the credits on some of these books, when they come out, we'll be able to say, okay, well, this is clearly the A team on the book, and this is clearly the B team on the book. And no comic book reader wants that. I mean, at least not knowingly wants to be like, okay, so here's the filler issue, and then next week we'll get Snyder or whatever, and I guess that'll be good.
Yeah.
I think Paul and I experienced this with Batman Eternal most recently. We know what it's like to have this bi-monthly times a month book. And sometimes it's great, and sometimes it's absolutely terrible. And when it's terrible, you've got to stomach terrible for like a month, month and a half. Batman Eternal was a stressful time, guys. It really was. I mean, like, it would be like, Ray Fox this week? Oh, that means Ray Fox next week.
Oh, now I'm going to have Tia back on the show so she can tell you that Ray Fox is great.
And you know what? I'm sure Ray Fox's other stuff is fantastic, but Ray Fox's arc of Batman Eternal was, I mean, you know what? He made Tim Seeley look good on that book, so I will say that. Seeley's arc of that book was not great. So there's my backhanded compliment of the day, I guess. And DC fans, we're not used to this bi-monthly, this weekly thing, at least not recently.
Marvel fans are the same way. Like, they did it once with Amazing Spider-Man and it was okay. Mm-hmm. But they never did it again because it didn't sell. And when they tried to do the Wolverine book for a year, I'm pretty sure they didn't even make it a year.
Yeah.
There was just no want for it. Nobody wanted that much comic book in a month.
And I hate to say it, but it boils down to whether or not you're fans, and I realize fans is such a huge blanket term for, you know, DC readership or Marvel readership or whatever, but it really comes down to whether or not your fans have, quality control in terms of what they're reading. I've been to shops where I talk to people and I'm like, well, you know, don't you think Detective Comics really isn't that good right now? And they go, well, it's okay, but, you know, I read Detective Comics, and that's it. Like, that's the end of the explanation, and right. I get it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that literally, like, that is the end of the explanation, and at that point, when I hear that, I go, okay, well, I'm not gonna, there's no sense in arguing with you, but, you know, it's part of who they are, and we've talked about how what you read shapes your identity, and it's difficult and trying to move away from that, but I think a lot of this whole bi-monthly thing banks on that idea that maybe you don't really care who's writing that issue, you know, 2 weeks from now or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, if we're being very cynical, isn't that kind of what Rebirth sounds like? It's like we're banking on familiarity and nostalgia. We're banking on habit. Like, people that have always read DC Comics, this is what they want, and they'll buy it no matter what, right?
Yeah.
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 Exactly. And these are books that are not engineered for people to quit. I mean, if you start reading Detective Comics or Batman or Green Arrow or something like that, I don't know what it is about those sorts of titles, but when you go to quit it, there's like something inside your head that goes like, you were a part of something big and now you're dead to us. As opposed to like when you quit like Clarion and it's like, that's okay. There's only six of you readers anyway.
Right.
It feels like you're, you know, quitting out on something like a legacy that you participated in. And I think that really, that whole idea of renumbering the books, that really resonates with that idea as well. That, you know, you're part of that move, that march towards issue 1000, you know, that's, you're contributing and you're a part of that as opposed to, well, we're back at number one again. So yeah, it's, I don't know. It's the smallest nitpicky little thing, but the biggest thing that just irks me right now is that it sounds like Juan Ferreira, massively talented artist. He worked with Paul Tobin on Colder. He recently worked on Gotham by Midnight. He did some great artwork for, I think he worked on Fire and Stone as well. And it sounds like they're just going to push him right off of Suicide Squad, new Suicide Squad, because it sounds like Jim Lee's going to be jumping on that book. Yay. Anyway.
Well, that won't last long. We're all really excited about the Rebirth.
Well, I mean, as we've said, I mean, sure, we're not optimistic. We'd love to wait and see what happens, but it sounds like there's a lot of money and a lot of time that's going to be required to basically dip your toes in the water and see whether or not it's for you. There's this one shot like we talked about, then you have to buy the Rebirth issue for your book, and then your series finally starts after that. And then at that point, your book is bi-monthly, so...
Not all of them, but yes.
Right.
Right.
The majority
of them. Yeah. The majority of them, yeah. So...
We'll know more in March. That's yeah.
What are your thoughts on DC's Rebirth? You can email those thoughts to us at cyborg@destroythecybe.org, or you can send them to us on Twitter @destroythecybe, or on Tumblr @destroythecyborg. You can also send them to us on Reddit @ireadcomicbooks.reddit.com. Our host and producer is Mike Rappin, and the show is edited by myself, Xander Riggs. This week's music was brought to you by Bonobo and Infinity Shred. You can find Bonobo on Bandcamp at bonobomusic.bandcamp.com and at bonobomusic.com. You can find more of the ever-present Infinity Shred at infinityshred.bandcamp.com and at infinityshred.com. Shoutouts to all our Podern family listeners who have joined us over the past few weeks. You can find our show and shows like ours with hundreds of different podcast personalities and topics on Twitter via the hashtag PodernFamily. Lastly, if you like the show, tell someone about it, rate us online, or write to us. We'd love to hear your thoughts on comics, and we hope comics are good to you.
Have you guys heard some of the rumored things being thrown around? I mean,
all I know is that Clay Mann is on an exclusive with DC, and I'm kind of upset about that because in my heart of hearts, I wanted him to come back and do another Gambit book or come back and do the X-Men again.
See, I know
again.
Him as a Ninjak artist. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, he does a Ninjak artist, but he's doing Gambit as Ninjak. That's pretty much what he's doing. I've seen some of the art on that book, and he's just doing Gambit as Ninjak. They both wear purple. Come on. Same guy.
Right.
Same guy.
No, it was really weird. DC was like, it was almost like, hey, Marvel, we can do exclusives too. And then Marvel's like, all right, what do you got? And they're like, well, we're going to take Tom King away from you. Hope you didn't like Vision too much. And again, sorry, Vision fans. I'm buying that when it comes out in trade, but I'm sorry your book is going to. Who am I kidding? I've seen you guys snatch my people all the time and close my books. I don't care. Anyway.
Some strange frustration happening right now. And right? I don't know. I feel like I'm missing a piece of the puzzle. But continue, Nick. Vision's going to finish. Tom King has said that he's going to finish Vision the way that he wanted to.
Well, he's going to finish this arc. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the end of it, right? Same way that, like, Gary Duggan got to finish Arkham Manor, and then he signed his Marvel exclusive deal, and they took him back. But it was funny, because DC was like, yeah, and we've also got Clay Mann, and I think it was John Timms or something, like the Harley Quinn artist, and they're like, those guys are exclusive, and everyone's like, that's not a very long list, and like that's not really like a coup of any sort. I mean, I love Clay Mann's art, but it's not like, I mean,
he wasn't
DC
really
got more excited when they're
the
like,
place.
We got John Romita Jr., and I was like, okay, and they're like, DC's like, no, you don't get it, we got John Romita Jr.,
yeah.
And I'm like, all right, fine. But clearly DC's trying to play that game now. But the rumors are Marguerite Bennett on Wonder Woman, apparently. And obviously
as we said, Tom King on Batman supposedly.
Yeah. Scott Snyder seems to be almost assuredly a sure deal on Detective Comics. And I think that's pretty much it at this point. That's all they've sort of thrown around. But we'll know. We'll know in a month.